Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Second half, very interesting one-on-one with legend Scott Baio. We'll do that right after Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, John from Tennessee. I went to play golf at my local course last week, got there for my morning tea time and ordered a screwdriver. No kidding. The 20-something bartender reached under the counter, got out a shoebox, and asked if I wanted a flathead or Phillips. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Scott Baio in studio with us. Good to see you again, my friend.
Nice to see you anytime, Adam. Thank you.
So I thought we'd just do a nice walk through Scott Baio's life and probably start at the start. Now, See, I'm right in Scott Baio's prime demo, although I'm not a teeny bopper. I'm a couple years younger than he is, and so I remember when Happy Days came about, and right. You hit the scene, and it was a whole, I guess they do, but the whole teen beat, tiger beat, pinup boy, I mean, like a crazy sensation that you couldn't really simulate today because there's too many channels and too many outlets and too many varied distractions. Does that sound about right?
Well, yeah, I think the big difference is when we were doing Happy Days, I think the average weekly audience was maybe 35 to 40 million people. And a successful show now is a million?
Right.
A million and a half?
Well, so, another thing, just to solidify your point, 35 million people when there was 240 right. million people in right. this. Now there's another 100 million people in this right. country. So percentage-wise, it was even greater.
Yeah. So there was nowhere you could go where you weren't recognized instantly, which is what you're in the business for, and it's great. It sometimes gets a little invasive, or it did get a lot invasive, but it was what the gig was, you know?
So you were born on the East Coast.
And I always thought you were too.
Yeah, everyone thinks I'm that guy, but I was born in North Hollywood.
I would have bet the farm that you were an East Coast guy.
You know, my dad was from Philly, so I think I had a little bit of that. Right. And I'm Italian. Yeah, so
you don't talk like a Californian. You don't have the coffee and the water, and I don't hear that in you. So when I watch television, I go, yeah, this is one of my people.
Well, in a sense, I am because I'm a Paisan.
Right.
The
Your mother, too?
No, my mom is not. My dad's a Corolla and my mom.
Nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. But I know you come. Well, your parents were immigrants, were they not?
No, their parents.
Oh, their parents. Yeah. Right. That's how my dad rolled.
Yeah.
So you grow up on the East Coast. What gets you to Hollywood?
Well, I watched it probably with you as well. When I would come home from school, the big thing for me was to watch television.
Sure.
So I'd watch the 4:30 movie at home and all that. And I thought I'd like to be on television. At the time, I had an older cousin. I have an older cousin who became a lawyer, who was an actor. Very talented guy, ham, do anything, sing, dance, play instrument. And he was on commercials, but he did an episode of The Monkees. Mm-hmm. And I thought, dang, that's pretty cool. And I said to my mom, Mom, I want to be on television. And she kind of, you know, get out of here. Anyway, so I kept pestering her a little bit. And she brought me to my older cousin's agents and managers. And I started going on auditions, which I hated, and started booking some stuff.
Was it about the look or about the vibe? Or was it about the performance?
What do you mean? That, well, I hated?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, you were getting booked. No, normally Rarely. When people hate it, they don't study, they don't and learn study. The lines, they right. they kind of mail it in. So was it about a look for you?
No, it was the look hurt me because at the time, what they were looking for in all the castings in New York were the Campbell Soup kids, the Irish-looking kids. Mm-hmm. And here I come, this dark-haired, dark-eyed Italian kid, and I got very little work. But I lived in Brooklyn, and to go from Brooklyn to Manhattan was like driving from Vegas to L.A. It was just forever.
Right, and you're how old at this time?
I'm 9, 10, 11 years old, and that, you know, after school was the only time you had to play with your friends, and I wanted to go play with my friends, but now I have an audition to go read for Post Serial or whatever the hell it was and mm-hmm. some other bullshit. And I didn't – and back then, excuse me, Adam, if I didn't know – if your name didn't end in a vowel, I wasn't interested in you. I wouldn't talk to you. We'd probably kick your ass. And that's the way – it was very tribal back then, right? Now, here I go into Manhattan, and I'm meeting these guys. I don't know them. And if I didn't know you, I didn't like you just right off the bat. I don't know why. I guess that was some cultural thing or some neighborhood thing. And I don't want to read. I don't want to read for you. And I'd give – you know, the way – I'm going to jump a little bit here. The way that I got Bugsy Malone was how much do you want me to go into this?
I want you to go into it.
Okay. I don't want to bore your audience because you have a massive audience.
They love you.
And I don't want to – some of them do.
Some of them do.
Some of them really don't like me a lot. anyway, so I had quit because I didn't want to go into Manhattan anymore. It really was a pain in the ass. Traffic on the highways going in there. I mean, really, it was hours and hours. And my poor mother had to drive me. And my father didn't have dinner on the table, you know? And I have an older brother and sister and all that kind of crap. And it was tough on us. So I quit. And then my manager at the time called and said, look, I know he doesn't want to do this anymore, but there's this movie that I think he's right for. Would he go and read for it? And my mother came to me and I went, you know, damn it. I didn't say damn it. Okay, Mom, I'll go. And I went. And I walked in the office, and there was Alan Parker, who
right,
passed
just
away
talking about him.
Not that long
yeah.
ago. Great director, great man.
Yeah.
And he gave me a script, and he said, can you read these lines? And I looked at him with disdain. I was like, yeah, okay. And I read them, and he said, can you read this other character? I went, now, and I remember it annoyed me because I didn't want to read the first time. I didn't want to read. Now he's got me reading something else. So I said, okay. And I read it and I said, am I done? He said, yeah. And I threw the script at him and I walked out the door. And before I got home, I had the job.
You were 15, 16?
13.
13. Oh, yeah. Because it took a while to make the movie, yeah. I guess. I saw it. It came out in 76. I saw it
13
in the movie.
Or 14, yeah.
I saw it in the movie theater.
Great movie,
out.
Right? Great.
Well, through the eyes of a 11-year-old, 12-year-old Adam Carolla, it was
but,
great.
Well, if it comes on ever, watch it. It's a fantastic movie.
Well,
not because I'm in it, but it's just what these people did, what Alan Parker and that whole bunch of guys did, was amazing.
Well, we were talking about it. Chris can look it up before you came in, but it had a very high Rotten Tomatoes score, like
81.
81.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, you can't not like the movie. It's kids dressed up as wise guys and mobsters shooting whipped cream guns.
And Jodie Foster was in that, right?
Yeah, right.
And she's about the same age, right?
She's you're two younger than me.
Did you see anything in Jodie Foster? Did you go like, hey, that chick's got it, or she's going places, or any
well,
of that?
We all sort of, we were all, don't forget, there's like 100 kids on the set, and Jodie was the only one who had her shit together. You know, she was never messing around on set. She was always knew her dialogue, and she was a pro. And I was a kid out of Brooklyn, and so was the guy who played Fat Sam and all the other kids who were all from England. But Jodie had just finished Taxi Driver.
Oh, my God.
And then flew to England to make Bugsy Malone.
Oh, it was filmed in England?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Wow. Imagine finishing Taxi Driver and then going to Bugsy Malone.
Yeah.
We were talking about that with Parker, doing Bugsy Malone and then doing Midnight Express.
Right, know, great.
A few years later. I mean, that's crazy whiplash, yeah. You know, hot tub into the into the snowbank.
Yeah, right.
We're looking at a picture of you from...
The Foxes. That's from Foxes.
That's from Foxes, right.
Which is another movie
you did with Jodie Foster.
Right.
So
great girl. Great. Fantastic. We used to make out in the hallways of the Holiday Inn in England.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Guess that's before she discovered her true calling.
I'm out.
Or maybe you drove her that way. I don't
know. That's on you.
You drove her into the arms of another woman, Scott. So,
Jody, I love you.
You do two big movies. Foxes was a big movie.
Mm-hmm.
Bugsy Malone was a big movie. And then Happy Days comes
between those.
Was between those.
Yeah.
So somebody saw Bugsy Malone and said, "Let's get him in here."
Again, I can deep dive you, or I can not deep dive you. Okay.
Because at the time you're doing this, I'm sitting in a one-bedroom apartment with my parents divorced in North Hollywood on a black and white Zenith TV watching Happy Days.
I got it.
So I'm in a totally different place. But I am interested in life and sort of how things can converge, you know, and how you can start off here and end up there.
I'm with you too. By the way, I'm doing a show about all of that.
You are.
I'm doing like a one-man show that I'm taking out about how it's called How Did I Get Here? Because I find it interesting, and I'll get into the other story. I find it interesting how did you get here, Adam? How did all the things that led you here, whatever it was, I find that kind of stuff fascinating.
I was thinking about this.
Don't do it. I'm doing it first.
I'm not doing a one-man show, but I was thinking about it as I was interviewing ex-NFL quarterback Eric Kramer, because he and I started off on the same Pop Warner football team when we were nine.
That's
His
great.
Dad was one of the coaches and blah, blah, blah. And then at some point, he went on to play for the Bears and the Lions, and he was a professional player. He played for like 13 years in the league. He started in the NFL. And I was saying to him, at some point, you and I are in the same park in North Hollywood practicing. And then at some point, you know, I'm 26, 27, driving a pickup truck, no insurance, working construction, making $9 an hour. And I'm watching you start in the NFL as a quarterback for the Bears. And then at another point, I'm hearing that your son OD'd and you attempted to kill yourself with a bullet under the chin. And now here we are, like, together.
Right.
And then just look at the weird path. Mm-hmm. And so then at some point when you were struggling with depression and your son OD'd, I was making tons of money and living a good life. Like it's crazy when you follow the trajectory.
Yeah, you know, I was at the on the rocks above the Roxy Theater on Sunset Boulevard years ago, and this is such a random thing for me. I opened a matchbook cover, and on the inside of it said, "Life is short, but very wide."
Hmm.
And I thought, that's pretty deep on the back of a matchbook cover.
Yeah.
And I tend to think, you know, as you look back at your life, I'm 61 now, and I look back and I go, you know, I did a lot of shit. And I don't remember a lot of it. Not that I ever did drugs or anything. It's just, I never did. I just, so many things that you do as you go through your life that you go, oh, I remember going, late at night, I Googled my name and I put in videos. And a show came up, and I had no idea what the show was. Me and Robert Reed from the Brady Bunch.
Really?
Yeah. I don't remember doing it. I don't remember what it was called, but I watched it. It was like a clip of me and him. And I went, well, when did I do this?
Well, it has. I've said to people that I'm now kind of at the point where many of these things didn't even feel like me or like I was there. And if you wanted, maybe if I had three beers, you could probably convince me that I never did the Man Show.
Right.
Like I'm not at the point where I'm not sure if I did it or didn't do it.
Yeah, I hear you.
Anymore.
I hear you.
It's a weird, and I guess as we drill down on this, traditionally in our country, and it's still this way for many people, but think about this. I've never considered this. You used to work at the same, you know, where my dad grew up in South Philly, they had the Baldwin Locomotive Factory, and everyone went to go work at the Baldwin Locomotive Factory. And traditionally in this country, you would have gotten a job there when you were 20, and you would have retired when you're 63. And you wouldn't have a lot of those moments where you go, did I do this or did I do that? Like, we know what you did. You showed up every day at the Baldwin Locomotive Factory. If you have a job that's a blessing, where you did this project, then you did that project, then you went here, then you did there, I have to sit back and go, wait a minute, did I ever meet this guy before? Did I work with this person? And people have to explain it to me because of this crazy cornucopia of life experiences. If you look at your life from age 14 on, it was nothing but different experiences in different places. It wasn't going to the Baldwin Locomotive Factory. So that's why your memory of it is probably going to be this way. And you, Robert, was it a TV show you did with Robert?
It was a, I think it was a pilot that he did about kids running away from home. And I'm watching it and I know it's me. And usually, Adam, if I'm watching a show that I'm in and I catch some of the dialogue, I'll remember the rest. I'll remember some of the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Zero. I don't remember shooting it. Remember where it was. And I thought, wait a minute. Am I getting dementia? You know, because those are the things that start rattling around your head at this age.
1978, No Prince for My Cinderella.
Oh, that's the name of it.
Yeah, my guys just looked
Get
it up.
Get out of here.
You also did the
There's
Love Boat.
There's a clip of it. I did the Love Boat, yes, with the great Christy McNichol.
That said, Robert.
Well, Robert, he was in that episode.
He might have been
in
that episode. Yeah, yeah.
Christy McNichol, boy, she was quite the...
I love her.
Oh.
Love her.
Yeah. She was a big deal back in the day.
She was a big deal.
Sort of the original lovable tomboy, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I met her on the Love Boat and I hung out with her. We were kids. We hung out for a while and I adored her. And I saw her a couple of years ago. Man, I just bear hugged her. I just think she's great. And we used to make out and stuff like that too.
Yeah. Well, you're on Tiger Beat and Teen Beat and all that shit. I mean, you were the draw,
I guess,
back then. So somebody sees Bugsy Malone and brings you out to read for Chachi?
No. They screen the movie. Paramount bought it out because Alan Parker and them were running out of money. Mm-hmm. They bought it. And then when the film was finished, they screened it for all the executives of Paramount. Gary was one of the guys.
Gary
Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in the room, and everybody, you know, in the business wanted the fat kid, Fat Sam, a guy named John Cassisi, who was also a Brooklyn boy, lived like a couple of blocks from me.
He was sort of the comedic relief.
He was
right?
He was fantastic in the movie. In fact, he steals the movie. He's so great.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wanted him. Gary Marshall, in his, you know, infinite wisdom, says, no, you know, I like the other kid. I like that kid. He looks like somebody that girls might like.
Mm-hmm.
And brought me out to do, either the Pinky Tuscadero spinoff or Blansky's Beauties with Nancy Walker. That's where the memory gets a little fuzzy. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which came first in that time. But I did Blansky's Beauties, and after that was canceled, Gary said, hey, do you want to be on Happy Days?
Happy Days has been on for a few seasons.
It was starting to
catch
pop.
Fire. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, yeah, sure.
And that was it.
And that was it.
Winkler, nicest guy in the world, right?
He's so nice, you think he's full of shit.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But that's who he is. I've known him since I'm a child, and he has been the same human being from then till now. It's amazing.
He's the most sincere person on the planet.
He's very sincere. He's super smart. He's mm-hmm. He's very savvy politically. Not, I mean, in terms of government, in terms of show business.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a nice man. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, but he's a gentle man.
I had my greatest sort of welcome to showbiz moment with him, because people always say, you know, when did you realize you'd made it? Or like, what was your first thrill? Because, you know, after a while, you get a little jaded. And my career trajectory was much different than young Scott Baio's. I was 30 years old, didn't make a penny, hadn't done a thing.
But you got a few bucks now, right?
Now I'm fine. But I never did anything. And I finally made my way into radio and K-Rock, and we were at a concert, the K-Rock Acoustic Christmas. We were backstage, and Henry Winkler was there, and everyone was hanging around talking. And I had this character that was popular named Mr. Burcham. And I heard a group of people, along with Winkler, going, I don't know, Mr. Burcham's around here somewhere. Like, who's the guy who does Mr. Burcham? He's somewhere. And I heard him, and I walked up, and I said, is you guys talking about me? And Henry Winkler, because you know this, if you know Henry, gives me the two-handed handshake. Mm-hmm. And he looks at me with his eyebrows up, you know, and he goes, nobody can do what you do. Nobody. What you do on the radio, nobody can do that. And I was like, oh my God, the Fonz. Yeah. Like, I'm mind blown, man. I remember I was 30 and a half or something. I was like, I grew up, and now, and Night Shift too.
Funny. Yeah, Night Shift, good movie.
Right. And I was like, this guy's telling that to me? I've arrived. I decided, even though.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's just a good guy.
I completely and utterly agree. And then there are douchebags.
There are.
And I always say, if no one's a douchebag, then there's no Henry Winklers. If That's everyone's right. good, then everyone's good. And we owe it to the Henry Winklers of the world, the actual good ones, right. to call out the douchebags. We right. can't all be in the middle somewhere. Right. So you get on to Happy Days. That turns – now you're getting – all the fan mail. I mean, they must have shown up in those big postage sacks every week.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember what that was like?
Yeah. There was about, it was 5,000 letters a week for weeks, for years. And it's an odd thing because you don't, excuse me, you don't see it. You see bags of mail, but that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And you're just saying, oh, okay, some people are writing to me. Then you try to write them back, but you can't. You just go, screw it. And then you're an a-hole because you're not writing them back. But it takes an event for you to realize that you're popular. And until – because you do, I do, everybody – you live in your bubble. You live in your world. You get up in the morning. You go to work. I go to the studio and I come home and I would do whatever. It started getting a little weird for me to get out of the house. People would follow me. I would get a lot of people come up to me in restaurants and things like that and whip out the old – a lot of tourists whip out the Kodak with the flashing bulb that turns.
Right.
And things like that. And then you think, well, that's kind of interesting. And it doesn't really affect you until you see it in mass. Mm-hmm. That is a very frightening moment.
Well, again, you know, I have people all the time say to me, oh, you need to watch this series. You need to watch The Walking Dead need to watch Yellowstone or something like that. You know, Yellowstone's a very popular show now. Mm-hmm. It's a big hit on cable. And if any of the cast members ever walked into a Starbucks I was in, save Kevin Costner, I would have no fucking idea. This was a different world. You knew Isaac from The Love Boat.
Yeah.
You would recognize him immediately.
That was my point earlier.
It was universal.
People,
yeah. You had to know.
Right.
And so if you're on the winning end of that, you're also on the losing end of that, which is you just can't do anything. I mean, without people recognizing you. I don't know how you go. How would you go out on a date back then?
You would go late, or you would try to somehow get snuck in to the movie theater if you go into a movie, or you would find a – don't forget I was a kid, Adam, and I was – up until I was about – I guess I was in my 20s, and it sort of was this way until later in life, but not as crazy it was as what as was I – as when I was on Happy Days. You figure it out, and you go to people's homes or things like that, and you just try to stay low-key. But the other side of that is that's the reason you do it, right? You want people to like you. You want people to enjoy what you do. So you've got like a double-edged sword. You kind of want to be alone, but then when the people don't come up to you, you go, well, hey, why is nobody coming up to me?
Right.
What the hell's going on? Right. So it's kind of a weird feeling.
Or maybe the audience does, Ron Howard in this whole equation. Did you see little sparks of young Ron Howard, like directing or creating?
Well, he was directing during the show. He'd done some TV movies, and everybody knew he wanted to direct. He wasn't, you know, shy about it. He told everybody, and we all probably knew there was a point when he was going to split, and he did. Good guy.
Did you move the family? Did the family relocate to Los Angeles or just you?
No. In the beginning, I would commute back and forth. We had a little apartment on Fountain Avenue by Cahuenga.
Wow.
One bedroom. And my mother would come with me and stay a couple weeks. So the schedule was on a sitcom, you do three or four episodes and you have a week off.
Mm-hmm.
And then three or four and a week off and three or four and a week off. And so during those weeks, I'd go back home. And then as I started becoming more popular and my family had been – my brother and sister had been out here at different times and my mother and father were out here at different times, we realized this is not a bad move out here. I mean, it was paradise back in 1970, whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't all the homeless, the taxes. No,
it wasn't a shithole.
The shithole that it turned into.
It was beautiful and it was clean.
Yeah, well, the area you're talking about, I lived in that area – off of Fountain and Cahuenga as well, or was I on Franklin and Cahuenga? Either way.
Nice.
Yeah, it was nice. And now you wouldn't want to go down and hang out in that area.
And then we bought a house in Studio City and kept going.
So how'd you were the younger of the two siblings.
They're twins. They're older than me.
Oh, really?
My brother and sister. Yeah.
How'd they take your crazy, astounding success?
The one thing in my life, maybe one of the top things in my life that that was important to me is there was to this day never an inch of jealousy from my brother or sister, never. I was always, no matter what I did, I was their kid brother. And I hated my sister when I was young and I threw Barbie dolls out the window and all that kind of crap. And my brother was my hero and he still is in a lot of ways. And he beat the shit out of me when I was young. And he did the big brother mojo on me when I was like 10 that I knew I could never kick his ass. Mm-hmm. Never.
Mm-hmm.
He did things to me. So he scares me.
Mm-hmm.
But they got a kick out of it. And my brother would travel with me when I would go do personal appearances. He was great about it.
You don't oftentimes hear that story.
No, I know. That's why, I'm very lucky. God gave me a good brother and sister, and because it could have gone bad, as we've seen.
Oh, yeah.
In show business.
It almost always goes bad. And because it's an equation it's a Rubik's cube and it's really hard to solve. It's built in. There's going to be jealousy. So what ends up happening, I think, is the one sibling becomes really successful. At some point, the other sibling like asks for a favor. Maybe they want to borrow some money, or could you put a roof on my house, or I got a kid, could you send him to college or something like that? And then the successful sibling does it. And then the other person kind of resents them a little it, and they don't really show their appreciation. And now it's a two-way street because the person that put the roof on the house goes, I've spent $37,000 put a roof on that guy's house. Christmas comes around. I don't get a fucking card.
Right.
And then the person who gets the roof has a lot of shame, which turns into resentment. And no, we're off and running.
Yeah, I think if I was a creep, if I had turned into an egomaniac in any way, it would have been different. And the other factor is that our parents didn't treat me differently. And there, it was no, oh, well, Scott has to do this and we need to do this for him. It was none of that. Mm-hmm. My father was an old world Italian guy, tough guy. And my mother was sweet as candy. And that's the way it was. He was the boss and we were the same people. Right. And I just had a job on television and had thousands of young ladies who were screaming for me. And that was the difference.
Yeah. We'll get into that. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Scott Baio right after this.
Hey, everybody. Hope you all had a lovely holiday break, giving gifts to and fighting with your family. So I wanted to remind you guys that the Corolla Family Barbecue is fast approaching. Saturday, June 18th, 2022 is the day. Lit, Loxy, The Smoke and Kills, and a ton of your favorite ACS comedians will be there soaking up the sun, food, and booze. We hope you're going to be there, too. We have a pre-sale that went quickly, so I decided to open this thing up. I am adding 100 extra tickets for this year's barbecue. That's 100 extra tickets. Bundles, barbecue, bar crawl. Take your pick and do it quickly. These are going to go fast. When the tickets are sold out, the only way you'll be able to get into the event is through the Case Club at CorollaDrinks.com. We can't wait to see you guys in June for the third annual Corolla Family Barbecue. Oh, my God, it's exciting.
Back with more Scott Baio. Yeah, the crazy teeny bopper. I mean, I've interviewed Donny Osmond, too, about this. Like, it exists now. There's no doubt, but it doesn't exist now how it existed back then for the same reasons. Harry Styles has a bunch of screaming crazy fans. There's no doubt about it. But for the same math equation we used on 35 million people out of a country that had 230 million people watching Happy Days every week, is the same sort of thing with the Tiger Beat and the Teen Beat and the crazed fans thing. You couldn't get away from it back then, and I don't know how you deal with that. And what is it? I mean, the craze thing is when most guys are 19, 20, or they're young, you're at the bottom of your powers. You're the least desirable. You know what I mean? Because you got no mojo. You got no job. You're nothing. Yeah. You're 19-year-old. You know, when I was 19, I had a one bedroom with three. I lived with three dudes. I slept on a bunk bed. We had a bunk bed. And I had a bunk bed, and I drove a pickup truck with no headrest. I was fit. I was good looking. I wasn't getting anything because I didn't have anything.
You're basically a big dopey guy when you're 19 years old.
With nothing.
With feet that are too big for your body, and you're just an idiot.
Yeah, you're like a nine-month-old Labrador.
Exactly right, yeah.
But not you, Scott Baio. Not you, Chachi. You got women, and they're coming at you. How do you deal with that?
It doesn't suck.
No, or maybe it does. I don't know. But how do you go, like, I need to be in a committed relationship, or do you?
But it still goes back to you have a life and you have your bubble. Mm-hmm. And that's the bubble you sort of stay in. Now, as you get older and you start becoming aware of the world and you're outside of your bubble, you go, wow, there's a lot of women out here and they're really nice and they come up to me and okay. This is going to be a fun time. And you go through that phase of your life. And I'm stammering because it's sort of tough to verbalize. If your world becomes your world is your world. My world is my world. And you only see the things as they come into your line of sight, right? So that was what I saw. I had my home and my work. And I would, that's what I did. And then as I got older, you get into the world, and there's other things out there. And then that becomes your world. And then you get tired of all of these worlds. You mm-hmm. outgrow all these worlds. And listen, I played it longer and harder than Cal Ripken, right? It being single, but that got boring. I met a beautiful girl and married her. I'm in love with her. And so that whole other life to me seems, it was great and it was fun, but I'm not that guy anymore. And I'll never be that guy anymore.
I was thinking about Aaron Moran, who was Joni from the Happy Days, and then Joni Loves Chachi after that. And I don't know why, it wasn't connected to you. I was just thinking about her. She was a big star too. And she died kind of sadly a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. maybe in a trailer park somewhere in Indiana or something. Like, she wasn't in L.A. She wasn't making the scene. And I don't know whatever really became of her. I don't know if there was some mental illness or some substance abuse or something. What was she like?
Cancer. She died of cancer, which I didn't know about and I got in a lot of trouble for. She was troubled, and I loved Erin. I really did. She was fun to work with, and we dated for a while, which is always a big mistake.
When you're shooting a show.
Yeah. never do that.
Well, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
But it's also never do it.
Right. And she got into some things. I don't know if when I started doing Charles in Charge came right after Happy Days. And I moved to another neighborhood and I made mm-hmm. new friends mm-hmm. and I didn't really see those other people from the show anymore. Not that I didn't like them or anything. You move on. And I lost touch with her and I knew and was told that she was doing things that she shouldn't be doing in terms of prescriptions or whatever it was. And I don't know. And I don't want to talk bad about her. She had a rough life. She had a very rough life and it was sad because she was a sweet. She wanted to be taken care of mm-hmm. and nobody did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because she was a dear girl. She was. And she just fell apart or something happened. I really don't know because I didn't talk to her for many years.
Yeah. She is, you know, a bit of a Hollywood tragedy. Sort of, she started young. I don't know what her family situation was. She had crazy success because anyone yeah. connected with Happy Days, and she was there
from the beginning,
from Jump Street.
She
yeah.
was there from the Love American Style, I think.
Yeah, and then you know, it's a story that you've heard way too many times. So let's talk politics.
Go.
You have been a Republican for. Ever, right?
Forever.
I mean, you were out campaigning with Reagan and doing stuff with Reagan when you were 22 or mm-hmm. something, young man. And Hollywood has recently, you tell me if you think the ship is turning back. Hollywood semi-recently just sort of declared war on Republicans. Trump really weaponized it, right. But it was always there. It just turned into it got a lot of creatine got added to it, or growth hormone or something for when Trump was elected. But anyone who is open about their politics and not on the right side, which would be the left side if you lived in Hollywood, your career is going to be impacted. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if it's, you know, people do this thing all the time where they go, you know, they go like, I've made a bunch of documentaries. They're all, I don't know, my documentaries, I'm looking at Chris, I would say are all up into the 90s on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
And a much higher average than most of the ones that get into Sundance, but none of my documentaries are ever going into Sundance, ever, because of what I say.
Right.
Now, the people that complain about McCarthyism are now the practitioners of McCarthyism, fine. And people say to me all the time, well, you're not canceled. I go, no, I'm not, but there is a business model to making documentaries and going to Sundance and having a bidding war break out is a good business model that I don't get to participate in. So while I'm not canceled, it does impact me to some degree. And that's just the business. That's Hollywood. That's how now most people end up like Muranos. You guys can look it up, but they keep it close to the vest and they don't want to say anything. I always go, you know, they, sometimes people say to me, what guys are Republican in Hollywood? I'll go, think of the people who don't say anything. Mm-hmm. Those are the Republicans. If you don't hear anything out of them,
right,
they're Republicans. That's how it works, because the Democrats never fucking stop bloviating about everything. But it is going to impact your career. How was it then versus now, and what's your head on it?
Then when I was a younger guy?
Yeah, you're a Reagan guy.
Oh, back then it wasn't – you could talk politics. You could – there was it was nothing. It wasn't as vicious. It wasn't a thousand times less vicious as it was. Nobody – because I think the parties back then were not that different.
Mm-hmm.
They might have had some different opinions on taxes, maybe some healthcare things. But other than that, it was, you know, we're all here. We're all Americans. We all love the country. We don't want people that don't belong here. And this is what I, you know, this was up until not that long ago.
Well, if you go back, just to bolster your point, you go back and look at Nancy Pelosi or Barack Obama or Chuck Schumer, or just Al Gore, President Biden before he was president, Joe Biden, just making speeches about the border.
Yeah.
You think you were fucking listening to Sean Hannity.
That's my point.
Drunk talking to Mitch McConnell on the phone. I mean, it's you go back and look at some of that stuff's 8 years old.
I agree.
You go.
But that's the difference. I don't know what. I don't know if somebody sent out a memo saying, hey, let everybody in here now because they'll vote for us. Let's do that. I don't know if that was like a big meeting that they had. I don't know how this works because you're right. They said the exact opposite 8-10 years ago. And I don't know what's different. I tend to think that whatever Trump did or wanted to do, they just did the opposite.
Oh,
there
for
was
sure.
No, there was no thought in what it was. It's just whatever it was. If he wanted black, white. If he wanted white, black. Right. And now we've got this disastrous situation in the country where it's a horrible place and getting worse. But
so, it wasn't a thing back in the day.
No, it was not.
You were a Reagan guy and you were...
Look, I met Reagan. People were so, wow, you met President Reagan. What was he like? And blah, blah. It's like, you know, and it was interesting to people. Now, if you say you met Trump, oh, screw him.
Right.
Well, okay.
Right.
You know, I'm just telling you a story. You don't have to go at me. I'm the same guy I was 5 years ago.
Right. So you were there and you experienced Hollywood as a Republican, and it was live and let live.
Right.
And what have you experienced since, or have you felt? Because some of it is not quantifiable. Like people say,
oh, I could quantify it.
Oh, I want to hear that. Go ahead. And Chris, if you can find President Obama before he was President Obama, but there's some folks, maybe Obama, maybe Nancy Pelosi, maybe talking about the border, Chuck Schumer talking about the border,
Bill Clinton
talking about the border. It's insane. You'd think you were talking to one of the Minutemen.
Yeah.
it's mind numbing. And then as I always scream at Dr. Drew, when they're making, you know, some of these, you know, Nancy Pelosi's 81 now. When she made the speech, she was 63. Do you think you're going to dramatically think about things differently that from age 63 to age 81?
No.
Yeah. So sorry. Give me your story.
Well, I would like to say that I'm probably the first canceled actor because I gave a speech at the Republican convention for Trump in 16.
Right.
And got a lot of shit. And I said it before I went in. I was doing interviews. I went on Judge Jeanine's show, and I think that's where I announced, like anybody really gives a shit. I know Scott Baio announced what he's voting for. after that, it was hell's a pop. You know, it was nuts. I was the Antichrist, and I, you know, I said, okay. And, but, and I remember saying in an interview, look, if I never work again, I'm fine. I don't care. I want this man to be president for ABC D&E.
How, financially, how does that work though? If you never work again,
that's my point. If I don't work again, I'm fine.
Okay.
I have the first dollar I ever made. I invested everything I ever made, and I've been on television for 45 years. So I don't, you know, money's not an issue. I said if I don't work again, great. I'm happy to do it. And the reason I did it, Adam, I did it for my daughter, for what I believe in, the way I grew up and the things that I saw and the way that I think people should be and the way the country should be. I did it for my kid. I want her to grow up in a country that I remotely recognize. And so when I gave that speech for him, which was amazing, one of the best stories of my life, one of the great stories of my life, hanging out, I went, he took us into the Lincoln bedroom, the whole, it was great. That was later on. And then my agent, whom I love, is like, what are you doing?
Sure.
I said, hey, it is what it is. I mean, I did it and I don't care. And so I then, okay, so I'll give you a story. So a friend of mine and I, guys in the music business, we had an idea for a show. So he contacted somebody at ABC, a woman named Dawn Soleil. And he said, hey, I've got this email. I've got this idea with for a music show with Scott Baio, blah, 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 blah. She writes back, emails him back, I don't want anything to do with Scott Trump Baio.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing about it is they're arrogant.
That's
about
my,
it.
So you, so to quantify it, there you go. She would nothing to do. So then I outed her. Oh, well, I didn't mean that. Well, of course you meant that. What do you mean you didn't mean that? Oh, right. You know, let me send the idea up to somebody above me. And I said, you know, buzz off. And then, so then I, another thing.
By the way, the Secure Fence Act of 06, basically the border wall, Obama, Schumer, and Hillary Clinton, I'm guessing, voted for it in 06. Yeah. So they all voted for a border wall in 06.
Which is bullshit.
Right. And they're, all right. They were all in their, I mean, Obama was younger, but, Schumer and Clinton were in their 50s, 60s.
Yeah. And they've had an epiphany.
Right. And then they make no bones about it.
And that's the thing.
They're funny. They're arrogant about it. Like HBO is a bunch of fucking arrogant dickheads.
Yeah. You can't say, I couldn't go out and say, oh, I don't, Joe Biden's a piece of crap. Forget it.
Right.
Trump is the devil. Trump is a Nazi.
Right.
I don't want anything to do with Adam Biden Carolla.
See, what you want, I tell people all the time, everyone talks about F you money, but you really want F me money, which is I can torpedo my own career and it doesn't matter.
Right.
That's F me money. Right. And that's financially, kids, if you're listening, that's where you want to get to.
Right.
F you money's good. F me money is better.
I didn't think about
Scott Baio has F me money. He fucked himself and he just plays golf all day.
Pretty much.
So would you say that you were like rendered persona non grata here in Hollywood because of your political views?
Yes.
And then I have been kind of studying this for a while, and I just kind of study the marketplace of ideas. And I'm like, well, how long can
this last?
Yeah, well, how long can the East Coast and the West Coast sort of ignore the middle of the country from an entertainment standpoint? Well, they can do it forever.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I'll give you an example that I always cite to people. If you would have looked on the iTunes top 100 podcast list 5-7 years ago, you didn't see – you would see Ben Shapiro. That'd be the only conservative voice on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Now there's 14.
Right. Good.
That's on the iTunes list.
Right.
So you have Gutfeld crushing it in late night. You know, you have The Daily Wire. You have these places. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw some stat that you know, Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson are the two biggest media guys right now in terms of just volume, you know, listenership. And I'm like, those are a couple of free thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
So how long can you keep the rein control? And I think the answer is the grip is loosening. I mean, Fox, you know, Tucker Carlson crushes whatever shows on CNN.
Right.
That's what's happening. So at some point, it's not that HBO or Netflix or any of those assholes will ever, or Sundance, will ever embrace you or me. Someone's going to have to create their own Sundance,
right,
for people, Parler or whatever it is, Twitter. You know what I'm saying? So this will give rise to other...
But then basically what you've got is a civil war.
Yeah, you have
You've got two countries.
You have two groups.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know if a country can function like that.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's like, you know, it's funny. Me, Dr. Drew, Mark Garagos, you know, I look at everyone as kind of a free thinker in that group. Mark's a Democrat. No one's welcome on CNN anymore just because we have ideas.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, so then everyone.
But you see it on television. You see MSNBC and CNN. It's literally the same script from one show to the next. At top to bottom, same cliches, same speeches, and then you go to Fox and Adam, I swear to you, I don't know how people don't see this. You go to I love Tucker Carlson. I'm a big Fox guy. I don't know how you can watch Fox and think that they are crazy people. And I try to be objective about it. Oh, Tucker Carlson's a Nazi or what Tucker Carlson. I'm like, you know, if you listen to the guy, if you really listen to what he says, it's pretty practical stuff. It's pretty logical stuff. And you go to the CNN or MSNBC and it's the same exact thing every night. I remember when Trump was president, how many times can you tell me Trump is the devil?
Right.
And how many different ways can you tell me?
Well,
people buy it. They buy it, and that's the problem. You know, you can. I'll give you an example, and I'll let you go. I'll let you go.
Where am I going?
No. I mean, my sister has a friend, and liberal, and my sister will show this person. The friend will say 5 million people died from COVID yesterday. And my sister goes, no, five did. No, that's not true.
Right.
No, look, here, five. This is off the CDC website. Five people. That's a Republican talking point. You know, there is a blindness to them, and I don't know. That's where I think the split is in the country. No matter what I say to anybody else, I cannot convince you, Trump, good or bad. You hate him. He tweets too much. He's a crazy man. He's volatile. He's all those things that you think, God, this is not a very presidential guy. But you can't deny what he did for the country was pretty damn good. They can't separate anymore. Trump, I think, became the split.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's when it all sort of got weaponized. And it was funny. It's funny, especially when you get to know a guy like Tucker Carlson. You'll go, oh, there's a great guy, nicest guy in the world.
I met him a couple of times. Yeah, he's like a frat guy.
He's a sweet guy, and he's a thoughtful guy. And you know what? I don't know what people. You know, it's funny. The two guys I know really well. One is Jimmy Kimmel. One is Tucker Carlson, and they're both very sweet guys. They're both very nice guys. I never get why people.
You can still talk to Kimmel?
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't come at you with.
No.
Interesting.
We're good friends.
Interesting.
There's a way to do it.
Of course there is.
You can just get on with it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mark Garagos is a very progressive guy. We're best of friends.
Yeah.
There's
I agree.
A way to do it. But you can't call the other guy you disagree with. You can say he's a person you disagree with. You can't call him a Nazi. Then there's a problem. Right. And that's the problem.
There's a cigar shop that I go to when I smoke with my buddies. And here's where I think when it comes down to people, it's all bullshit. In the cigar shop is white guys, black guys, Persian guys, Asian guys, all different walks of life. And some of them are conservatives, some of them are liberals. And we go at it. And we make fun of each other. When we come in, they say, "Oh, everybody, get your sheet out. The KKK is here." And we make black jokes at them, right?
Right.
But we're friends. We mess with each other. We joke with each other, and we'll argue with each other and get into it with each other. And when the conversation's over, the next thing somebody says, "You guys gonna be here tomorrow?"
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right. Have a good night. And,
right.
And you split. So I feel that when you get people together, whatever race you are, whatever religion you are, whatever, when you get them together and sit down, everybody's pretty cool. The media is a despicable machine, and they foment all of this. And I don't know what the gain is. I really don't. I don't know if it's division. Division causes ratings, creates ratings. I don't know. But I choose not to live my life like that. I'll talk to anybody. And you know what, Adam? I am probably, I don't know how conservative you are. I'm one of the most conservative people I know about everything. And I don't care what your life is. I really don't. I've been in show business my whole life. I've worked with enough gay people that I don't even see them as gay anymore. I don't care.
Yeah, can't avoid it. If you work in show business.
No, I don't care if you're gay, if you're black, if you're Persian. I don't give a shit.
It's all crazed narcissism. No one gives a shit if you're gay.
You're a good person.
It's 2022.
All of it. If you're a good person and you obey the law, we're great.
Well, I'll do it a step further. If you're a conservative or if you're an American or if you're just a taxpayer, you are rooting for black people. You're rooting. I want everyone to pay their taxes and raise their kids and not be involved with crime and be good citizens.
Yep.
It's just for selfish purposes.
Yep.
It's not.
That's for my country.
Right.
I wanted my country to be the best. Listen, this is what drives me effing crazy. Trump said America first and everybody blew a gasket.
Right.
How racist and the whole bullshit and how dare you and blah. And I go, you know, I want my kid to be first in class. I want my kid to be first when she has a golf tournament. Don't you want your kid to win the football game? Don't you want your race car guy to win?
Fantasy football.
I mean,
go ahead.
Or whatever it is, don't you want your team to be first?
Yeah.
And everybody goes, of course. Well, what's the difference?
Oh, and by the way, you would accept that if it was Canada or France.
Exactly.
Talking about being patriotic.
But because Trump said it.
No, I know. I've said it a million times. Look, you can't just do the opposite of what Trump has some policies, and some of those policies work. Look no further than the border.
Right.
And it's insane to go, well, Trump's building a fence. We're taking the fence down. Trump's had a stay in Mexico policy. We're getting rid of that. Trump, get rid of all of it. As I've always said, fine, get rid of all of it and then replace it with a better idea.
Right, no.
Or leave it in place.
No.
Because otherwise we're going to get a shit show at the border, which we have.
Yeah, and with COVID.
Right. You can't just do the opposite. All right. Should I give you a plug, Scott? Well, actually, let me hit X chair here. I used to dread sitting at my desk until I got my X chair. Now I look forward to it. More comfort means more productivity. X chair pays for itself. Thanks to getting more work done. I had the X chair long before they came on as a sponsor. I just went out and bought one years ago and I've loved it. Now I'm sitting on one right now. Turn on the LMX massage feature. Choose from four different massage options. And if it's too hot or it's too cold, you flip on the LMX temperature regulator and you can get heat or cool going on your lower back, plus customized support from X-Chair's patented dynamic variable lumbar, or DVL. You can try it out risk-free for 30 days. Once you realize how much better it is, you'll never go back to your old chair. It's X-Chair, right, Dawson?
Go to xchairadam.com now. That's the letter X, chair, ADAM.com, or call 1-844-4XCHAIR for $100 off your order. X-Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, and you can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. xchairadam.com.
So, Scott, I got your Twitter at Scott Baio. I got your Instagram at Real Scott Baio. Website, scottbaio.com. The one-man show.
Yeah, I'm
opening at Sundance? Do you, you want to come back when that thing launches and give it a plug?
Absolutely.
All right, and go to amcarolla.com, and I'm going to be taping a couple shows with one with Bill Shatner, one with Dennis Quaid, one of the good ones, by the way. Brea Improv, February 6th, and you can check out my stand-up specials, Truth Yeller, on dailywire.com/Adam. You can sign up over there. Until next time, Adam Carolla, Gina Grad, Ball Bryan, and Scott Baio. Say it. Mahalo. Thanks, LeBron.
You can watch this episode of The Adam Carolla Show at youtube.com/Adam Carolla. Follow The Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get your tickets to see the Ace Man in Brea with William Shatner and Dennis Quaid. Get them now at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting, you want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.